raised for the shelter. All funds go directly to the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal towards their second stage housing project and Saradikitak Social Pediatric Clinic. Join us for fun, community-driven, even including musical performances generously supported by CKUT. Everyone is welcome. Bring your friends, family, and pets, and come walk with us. Follow our Instagram at SpiritWalkMTL for links to register and for more information.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. From drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Chochage in Ganiagaha and Munayang in Anishinaabe, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah De A, recording not from home, not for the first time in over 2 years, but recording from Fringe Park at Parc des Amériques, corner of Saint Laurent, the Maine, and Rachel Outdoors, here bringing you a very special edition of Upstage, the Fringe edition. On tonight's show, coming to you from Fringe Park, just a day before the official opening, we're going to speak with the artists behind five shows coming to the Fringe: Adam and Eve, Cornichon with Nisha Coleman, Sire, a father-daughter vampire story, The Walk in the Snow with Jem Rolls, and Would Virginia Woolf Contemplate on Suicide if She Were Filipino? I'm so glad you can join us. I'm here with part of the Fringe crew. They're busy setting up the park, getting ready for about 10 days worth of live outdoor shows and events. I'm here with some of the wonderful people from the CKUT crew, including Jack, Olivia, and Chloe. And I'm here with my very first guests. Welcome, Marissa Blair and Jeroen Lindemann. So nice to speak with you guys again.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And we're meeting in person because you guys had a busy pandemic as artists. You were doing a lot of online stuff. You were at the physical Fringe last year, which was a slightly reduced version. How are you feeling being at the, like, almost near normal Fringe Fest?
It is excellent. I am thrilled. I've been looking forward to this since 2020 to get, like, you know, back on the stage with Jeroen, and we're just really thrilled. Thank you for having us. And yeah,
finally out of the COVID cage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your company Mad Paradox is presenting Adam and Eve, created and performed by the two of you. You have a creative and real life partnership. Did you guys start working back in 2019 together, is that right?
Yeah, Marissa cast me in her play Spurt of Blood by Antonin Artaud, and from there, yeah, history.
Yeah, we started having discussions about what we liked in theater and what we took away from Spurt of Blood, and we really connected on a lot of theatrical, like, intentions and motivations, and decided to create a production company from there.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Let's get into the meat of it. Adam and Eve, you're tackling one of the oldest stories out there, and we'll also mention that you've brought me a gift today. Mm-hmm. I'm holding a nice, beautiful red apple. What kind is this? Is this a court? No.
Spartan?
It's beautiful. It's got a nice glow to it. Now, Fringe artists, when you want to stand out and you come up with promo material, you could go the traditional way and get a flyer, get someone to design it, maybe do it yourself, or you can come up with something creative. I've seen bananas given out in the past. You're giving out an apple with a QR code stuck into, I guess, a chopstick kind of thing, stuck into the apple. It's literal, and I love it. Why choose to do one of the oldest stories around?
I've been a bit of an existentialist, and I started also questioning things about religion, and was wondering about the purpose of things and what the purpose of that story is. And I was wondering what they thought when they ate the apple, when they got all the knowledge.
Yeah.
What would you do? Would you still do it?
Also, I think when he approached me with the idea of Adam and Eve and got me thinking about it, I think, more. And I think I thought it was great material because it felt like it was going to flush out the humanity of these two people. Because
there were no motorcycles back in the original Adam and Eve,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. There were not. There was not much going on, you know. So, and also, yeah, just flush out the humanity of it all. And, like, who were they? And what was their relationship? Because they were the first two people. So, like, what did they do? What did they, what were the games that they came up with? What were some of the things, other, you know, the activities that they decided to do? So I was really interested in the relationship, and also, you know, was it a perfect relationship? And so that got me thinking about, you know, what they really felt about each other.
And do you differ at all from the original kind of story? We know, well, traditionally Eve was created from Adam. Everything's really great. Then she gets tempted. We get kicked out of the Garden of Eden. Do you stray from those bare bones, or, pardon the pun, or do we kind of meet this in a different way? And is it told in a contemporary style,
right,
or are they truly kind of like in what you would call the Garden of Eden in the biblical sense?
Well, you meet it in a bit of a different way.
Okay.
So we're already in the garden, mm-hmm, and we're living our life in the garden. And what we wanted to play with and the thought that we had is everyday paradise really paradise? And does it stay a paradise?
So we do pick it up from they're already there. And they're kind of new in their relationship, I would say. And then as it goes on, it starts to, you know, not be so nice, not be paradise after all. And then there is the eating of the apple. We do touch upon that. We do touch upon the exodus of Eden as well. But that, we do stray away from, like, the traditional reading, I would say, of the Old Testament. So what you're coming with as an audience member is what we expect you to come with a basic understanding, mm-hmm, basic knowledge. But, like, how are we going to do it? We're going to turn it on its side, and we're going to turn it inside out, and we're going to make a mess, and we're not going to hold back. And
I want to get to mess in just a second.
Yeah.
That is the voice of Marissa Blair, co-creator and co-performer of Adam and Eve, presented by Mad Paradox, along with Jeroen Lindemann. They'll be performing on stage at Mission Santa Cruz Venue 7. Back as a venue this year, which is super exciting. First show Friday at 7. Yeah, it gets messy, right, with the apples?
It sure does.
Tell me about that.
It's a feeding frenzy. It is an apple-eating orgy of number two.
Jeroen, you're surprisingly silent on this. You're looking very stoic.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we make a mess. We like to make messes, but we clean them up. You know, we clean them up. We definitely incorporate.
Well, in the end,
that.
We're humans, and we're messy.
There,
so, yeah, we make messes, and we try to fix them and clean, mm-hmm, them up and, mm-hmm, do it better next time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why should people come see the show?
I think it's crazy and outlandish, and I think it's going to be the most exciting piece of theater that you will see at Fringe Fest this year.
I love it. Marissa Blair, thank you so much for coming in. Jeroen Lindemann, thanks so much for coming in. How can we follow you guys if we want to keep up with your creative work?
We have our website, madparadox.ca, and of course we're on Instagram and Facebook. Just look for Mad Paradox and you'll find us there.
Adam and Eve at Venue 7, Mission Santa Cruz, 60 Rachel Street. First show Friday, June 10th, 7 o'clock. Thank you, Marissa. Thank you, Jeroen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, and it's a very super, super special edition of Upstage because I'm not recording this in my home office. I'm here at Fringe Park, beautiful Saint Laurent Rochelle. It's technically Wednesday. You're listening to this on a Thursday, thanks to the magic of radio. Still to come, a daddy-daughter vampire story. Would Virginia Woolf contemplate on suicide if she were Filipino? And the famous Jem Rolls. I can see him across the park right now. now, waving, putting his knapsack down. He's going to be with us in just a moment. But first, a story about pickles. Nisha Coleman is one of the most appraised, celebrated storytellers in Montreal, but she also travels and has performed all over the place. And she set up quite a challenge for herself for her next Fringe show. Nisha, welcome to Upstage.
Thank you. Hello.
The official title, Cornichon, un parcours perplexe vers la francophonie.
Mm-hmm.
Normally you perform in English.
Yes.
What's the deal?
Well, I like to put myself in a vice and make things difficult. I thought this would be an interesting next step, storytelling-wise. I've done a few solo shows, and I've always wanted to perform in French.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had this idea years ago to write a show in French and perform it at the Fringe. And I'm finally at the stage where I can at least give it a try. Give it a try. It's harder than I thought it was going to be. I will be honest.
You grew up in a small town in Ontario, is that right?
That's right.
So we weren't necessarily exposed to French growing up. You're such a fixture here in Montreal that people might think you're kind of a bilingual Anglo, right? But you eventually moved to Paris and you were there for a while. So just tell me about your journey with French and why this is a challenge for you.
Well, yeah, that's in essence the show, is like me growing up in this rural community with very little exposure to French, except for French classes, which were poorly taught. And just this desire to speak this language that I had no access to, and trying in various scenarios at various points in my life to learn this language, not succeeding or getting myself into pickles, so to speak. I eventually moved to France, still thinking that maybe I had like a baseline French level and still was caught off guard, still couldn't speak the language, still couldn't get the words. It took so many years to finally get a handle on this language. And what I'm learning through this show is that I will always be learning and I'll always be improving and I'll always be making mistakes. And part of the show is learning to be okay with mistakes.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful message that anybody can take with them. So I'm wondering if you had any particular challenges, doing translations. Were you writing in French or did you write in English and then translate something with someone helping you along? How did that work?
I wrote in French,
mm-hmm.
mostly.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a bit of a patchwork, but mostly in French. And then working with my director, Thierry, sometimes he would say, I don't know what that means. I don't know what you're saying. That means nothing to me at all. So then I'd have to tell him what I wanted to say, and then we'd rework the sentence so that it would make sense. I mostly did it on my own, but Thierry has been a big help in rehearsals, calling me out on nonsense phrases and words that we don't use in that way, and misunderstandings that could be awkward.
It's so frustrating because two languages almost can't be more similar, even though they have very different roots. So many words are very similar, but yet there are many, many things that do not translate and they don't work. My father's francophone and he'll call me out straight away if I'm getting something wrong or if I get a gender wrong. Why is a table a girl? I'm speaking with Nisha Coleman, who is a wonderful storyteller who is presenting, as you're saying, writing in French, speaking in French for her show Cornichon, un parcours perplexe vers la francophonie. It is coming to Fringe, and you're also a past Fringe winner. You won the Frankie back in 2016. You did an online show for the Fringe last year. How does it feel to be as like kind of a long-term Fringer to be back in person, getting ready to perform in front of a live audience?
It almost feels new again because mm-hmm. it's been so long since I've been on an actual stage. So there's sort of a trepidation of like, oh, I don't remember how to do this. But then, you know, being here in the park, it's all starting to come back. The familiar faces, the environment, those tables, the beer tent, the posters, it's all coming back. So it actually feels good. It feels like coming back home or something.
Oh, such a beautiful feeling. We're here live at Fringe Park right now, and we're kind of in the midst of setting up. There's going to be an artist Senka set. You're here early for that, Nisha.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of a vibe and a place. I want to get back to your process with Thierry Leblanc, your director. By the way, the show, first show Friday, 10 o'clock at Le Balustrade at Monument National, which I think is a new venue this year or for the second year coming.
Mm-hmm.
So what, besides telling your own personal story, like what kind of ground do you explore in talking about being an Anglophone learning to speak French?
What kind of ground I explore as an Anglophone learning French?
Like, do you get into history? Do you look at Canadian history? Or do you look at the Two Solitudes at all? Like, is that part of your story?
What's interesting is it was, to start, when I started writing this show, it was a big part of it. And all of that sort of fell away.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I could explore those topics through the story itself. So I had all these segments that were historical and a lot of facts that I was trying to make interesting because I find them interesting. But as we started rehearsing, we started realizing that those aspects are already entwined in the stories. So it's for me personally, it's those scenarios where you walk into a store and you're ready with your French. And in my case, I would have like looked up the words in the dictionary or even written it out on a page and walk into a store. And then you go for it. But, you know, your heart's pounding and you're worried that they're going to say something that you don't understand. And if they switch to English, it's like you failed. If they don't understand, you failed. If they say something and you have to say pardon, then you failed again. Like, there's so many ways to fail. And when you're afraid of failing, it's almost like the fear paralyzes your mind and then you can't even think or hear or understand anymore. And that's really what was happening for me when I moved to Montreal at age 19. I was studying at McGill and I was really, really adamant that I was going to learn French that year. And it just didn't happen. I took classes. I was, you know, I had my dictionary always with me. But in real life situations, I would always get thrown a curveball and be caught off guard and not know what to say and just sort of panic. So it's those kinds of moments in Quebec. And then in France, it's a lot of saying yes to things without understanding what I'm saying yes to. And then finding myself in these completely absurd and ridiculous scenarios that I didn't sign up for, but I did, but just unwittingly.
And you were busking. That's how you earned your money. So you're in front of the public every day. So I imagine people were probably, I think they're very chatty. Being in public life there is a bit different, right? So people were just going to come up to you and you'd have to just hope for the best that you were understanding what they were saying.
Yeah, and at first I didn't at all. But I found that if I gave that look, you know, that vacant eye look, that it would sort of turn them away. They wouldn't want to talk to me anymore. So I would pretend to understand, and I learned to master the look that I did understand and nod, even when I wasn't, because sometimes I could understand maybe four words and I would put them together into a phrase that I thought they might be saying and respond accordingly. And that's what would sometimes get me into trouble.
That is the voice of Nisha Qualman, storyteller, about to present Le Cornichon. Nisha, we're at a weird point in Quebec history yet again where language is front and center, maybe an inflection point. We're wondering, are we doing enough to protect French? But some people are putting in rules, perhaps, that people find are in a bit of an overreach. So there's a lot of conversations about that. I'm wondering if you're getting interest from the French media and French theatergoers about, you know, an anglophone qui apprend le français and is telling a story about it. Have you found that interest just yet?
Not yet, but I hope there will be that interest, and I hope francophones will come to the show and sort of get that perspective of, it's not that people don't want to learn French, it's that it's really hard.
Yeah.
And it's important to encourage people who are trying. And also, you know, I have a message for French teachers too. It's like, you have to make French interesting and fun. And when someone has the desire to learn, then they will learn it if they want to. And that's the thing, is like, the rules make it a little bit trickier, you know, if it's forced. So I find that for me, French, the way that it was introduced when I was only 5 years old, was like this beautiful thing. The words were beautiful. The language was beautiful. we only learned really nice words like soleil, arc-en-ciel, and it was just this beautiful world that I wanted to live in and exist in. And I think that that introduction to the language played a huge role in my desire to want to learn French.
What is a word that you learned while working on Call Michon that you came to love?
That I came to love?
Or loved from the very start?
Well, I love the word cornichon.
I agree.
I think it's really cute.
There's a great song called Les Cornichons. It's a song about going on a picnic, basically. To me, it's the most French of all French songs.
Exactly, except it's an Italian who sings it.
Yeah.
But it's very French. I love that song. Yeah.
Isha, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for coming by. Where can we find you when you're not on stage?
That's a great question.
On Twitter.
On Twitter?
Or where can we follow your work?
Oh, you can follow my work. Nisha Coleman at anything. At Nisha Coleman on any platform, basically.
Nisha Coleman brings the story of learning français, cornichon, and parcours perplexe vers la francophonie. It is coming to La Balustrade at Monument National, first show Friday at 10 p.m. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Still to come through the rest of the hour, a gay Filipino play. A daddy-daughter vampire story and gem rolls is in the house. We'll have that in just a moment as we record from Fringe Park. Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. I'm your host, Sarah Day, and we are recording at the Fringe Park. Saint Laurent and Rachel, they're getting set up. We're getting ready for an artist Sanka set, but I'm stealing the artists and I'm putting them on my show. We're still going to talk to Jim Rolls before the end of the hour, as well as a gay Filipino play. But first, a show that I've been intrigued by for the last little while because it ticks the boxes of my favorite genres. Vampire? Check. Comedy? Check. And also, Dara Mondu is one of the creators and performers. Check again. Welcome, Dara. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Sire, a father-daughter vampire story coming to Petit Campus for shows tomorrow, in the past technically, from when we are speaking on Thursday. Mm-hmm. You are putting on the show with your dad, Robert.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I wrote this piece very much in lockdown as an exercise of ideas that I'd had kicking around, but something that really came to fruition, I think, when we were all negotiating grief and sudden proximity to family and becoming an adult in a family and renegotiating your relationship to the people you're related to as, like, a person who's finished, like, growing up. Like, you are who you are and you're being accepted. And at the same time, channeling a lot of the anxieties that I definitely started feeling about health, about wellness, about longevity, after considering, like, the way I saw my parents taking care of their parents at the end of their lives. And my favorite way to address anxiety is to be really jokey about it and air all of my family's dirty laundry on the Petit Campus stage. So I'm very excited for this opportunity to do that.
Okay, so how much of your real life gets into the story of Vera the vampire, your character, and her dad who's showing up?
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is real and how much of that is you as a writer?
Vera is very much a placeholder. As an actor and a playwright, I am just playing myself. This isn't, like, hugely challenging. She doesn't have a lot in common with me. She's very much a shut-in. She very much needs encouragement to go out. That is not my truth at all. What is really based in reality and what I have borrowed from my family's story is the story of how my parents met. Like, she sets her father up being like, tell me again how you met my mom. And I borrowed little stories of how they met. I borrowed little stories from the 80s, from my mom's stories of dancing around in nightclubs and stuff. And I really wanted to make it like a love letter. I think it's decidedly millennial to romanticize the 1980s for that reason.
Yes.
We're seeing the way the Gen Z kids are doing that to the 90s, and
yeah,
we cannot relate.
Nope.
But I still have this very, like, romanticized view, I think, of like just the lore that brought me into existence, the 80s and the romance that led to this 90s baby coming along. So
where did your parents meet?
My parents met at Concordia, and they got married at Concordia, and
what?
They baptized me at Concordia,
what?
And then I just graduated from Concordia.
Where did you get baptized? At the church at Loyola?
Yeah, at the Basilica. Wow. Like at the time, I think it was more of like a Jesuit Catholic institute, and now it is like the multi-faith chaplaincy. Yeah. It's a lot more accessible, but you can still have weddings there. You can still like do these different rites and stuff. So all the photos of my parents' wedding is like at the quad and stuff. So
that's too funny. Concordia's NDG campus in Loyola, which is a very beautiful place.
Absolutely.
So tell me about your dad, because he's also a theater person. You're a writer and a performer, and mm-hmm. he's also in the scene.
Yeah, my dad's primarily a painter. My dad's always been like a total show pony. Like, I get my own comedic timing, my own like zest for showing off and cracking jokes when I'm nervous, definitely from him. And I have really good, like, I think, comedic chemistry with my dad. I presented the first draft of the script to him as a Christmas gift, like in 2020, just being like, look, it's lockdown, we can do this online, I just want to do a stage reading. And I wasn't prepared for how involved and like invested in the story he would become. And every little note he had about changing this part of the script and rearranging that, and maybe we can just have this moment first because it sets up this other moment. I was very surprised that my dad had these amazing instincts for like dramaturgy.
Yeah.
Which like, I feel like nobody knows what dramaturgy actually is, but if it is, it's this, it's very helpful.
My experience is that even dramaturges don't understand what it is, and you can ask them and they'll come up with different things.
Word.
Which you actually worked with a dramaturge, Jesse Stong.
Yes.
And obviously your dad gave a lot of input here too.
So much input. Jesse's very much like, he held space for the Young Creators Unit at Playwrights Workshop Montreal, which has been where I met my collaborator Calder Levine, who's directing the show. This is me and Calder's like sixth consecutive artistic project together since we first met in like 2019. So we've really packed in like so many projects. We work super well as a team. And he's had some help in that as well. But really, my dad was the most hands-on. My dad is the one up there saying this stuff. He wants it to be amazing. And we're so proud of, like, what, draft number 7, I think we're at now, that's going up tomorrow night. So I'm really, really excited to share this with the world.
That is the voice of Dara Mondu, who is the writer or co-writer. Is your dad getting a co-writing credit?
He fought me on the co-writing credit. Okay. He's like, no, it's by you. It's by you with me. So
Dara is the writer. Her dad said so. She's also performing as Vera the Vampire in Sire, a father-daughter vampire story coming to Petit Campus to haunt you starting June 9th, Thursday. That's today. Running until the 19th.
Father's Day.
Yes, that's right. Father's Day is always the last day of Fringe. And I'm always like, Mom and Dad, I need to go to Fringe. And they're like, my dad's like, okay, bye. And my mom's like, no, we're celebrating Father's Day.
Fathers
okay.
get into my show for free on Sunday the 19th.
That's just great to know. Dad, we're going. That. Your first show at the Fringe with your production company, Heart of Gold, was Burning Bridget Cleary. It was a very spooky story about changelings, Irish folklore, and superstition. It was creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you keep that vibe in this piece as well?
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm such a horror gal, and I'm very interested in the challenge it is to do horror on stage in theater, because horror as a genre lends itself really well to cinema, to special effects, to rapid editing. And we're having a lot of fun at Petit Campus, specifically because it's a concert venue. It has these like sick lights, these great sound effects, all manner of like ways of making the audience more like shocked and surprised and immersed in the genre, in the space. So I'm not afraid to scare people. I'm not afraid to make them cry. I'm like really looking forward to that. So Burning Bridget Cleary was definitely one of the first times I was like exploring an interest in history. Like, that was a true story about this woman who was like burned alive by her family for being a fairy changeling, like super late in the 19th century. So I was like interested in like how little it takes for weird, talented women to be vilified and instantly shut up with this. Like, fire has just been this like natural phenomenon we've been using to silence women and queer people for centuries all over the world. So I was very interested in that and like having fun with it. And this was just more of, like, a step back, a more of, like, something rooted in my own era, very much, like, in the year we are living now, and romanticizing specifically another specific era of, like, the 1980s and this, like, goth wave nightclub energy that I wanted to, like, infuse as an aesthetic.
Before I let you go, I want to know a bit more about Vera's story and her dad, because you've mentioned that, you know, you're borrowing from your parents' own story of how they met. You were talking about elder care, mm-hmm. talking about family ties. But what's the story here?
So Vera is a human girl. Vera is the daughter of a woman who convinced a vampire to change her into a vampire, give her eternal life, and then promptly dumped her daughter on the doorstep of this man who gave her that gift, and then we never saw her again. So that's how this vampire winds up raising a mortal girl. So she's at a point where taking care of her aging father is draining her. It is stopping her from living her life. It is occupying a lot of time, but it's also the most fulfilling and most rewarding relationship in her life, so she doesn't want to give that up. So she's at this crossroads, very much like in her early 30s, like kind of like approaching this kind of midlife place where I think most people start to look at their parents as potential sources of anxiety, sources of worry and labor and investment of time, and have these like new fights where suddenly the roles are reversed. You are taking care of your parent the way they had to take care of you when you were so small. So it's very interested in like throwing that, seeing how adolescent and childish and bratty and funny and awkward and painful it can be to like have these parts of a relationship explored with a lot of heart, I hope. So.
You mentioned, you know, cinema is really what we think of as the place to see horror, take mm-hmm. it in, but we're doing it on stage now. I'm wondering what movies, TV shows you've turned to as inspiration, because the vampire genre, it's so specific, but it's also got so many sources.
Absolutely. I would always say vampires are a literature monster. Like, every big blockbuster vampire movie we've ever had was based on a best-selling book. So they do not come specifically from the tradition of cinema and film, but as a monster, as like this phenomenon in horror folklore, you know, they are the reasons we had so many special effects and lights. The way Bram Stoker, the way a lot of these authors, even Stephanie Meyer, describes vampires, challenges filmmakers to be like, what does that look like? How do I bring this to the screen? So you have a lot of fun doing that on stage, being like, so I guess we need makeup. I guess we need like a puff of smoke. I guess we want the red lights to be at this angle to have that effect. And it's really, you have the advantage of being like physically close to your audience, which can be terrifying. You don't get that in cinema. So that's like really what I think we're going to have a lot of fun, like jumping out and like giving them a little startle. I was very influenced by what we do in The Shadows, specifically the film and some of the characters in that, who kind of have the same like negotiating point with like, you told me you were going to turn me into a vampire, so make good on that promise.
Yes.
And it was very, like, it is very playful. It's very, like, it assumes that you know the rules of how vampires work and then makes jokes from there. So we kind of have to, like, establish the rules of our magical realism universe for the audience to be with us and, like, along for the ride, and then make them laugh, hopefully. So
sounds like a bloody good time.
It's a really good time.
Dara, thank you so much for coming down.
Thanks so much.
That is Dara Mondu. She is co-creator, writer, starring with her father, Robert Mondu, sire, a father-daughter vampire story coming to scare you at Petit Campus starting Thursday, June 9th, running until the 19th. Fathers get in for free. Do you have to, like, bring your kid with you to prove that you're a dad?
No, I'll take your word
okay.
for it.
And Dara, where can we follow you when we're on stage?
You can follow me at Votre Dame on Instagram. I'm your girl from NDG, so votre.dam at Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook and all the rest. Please hunt me down.
And your production company, Heart of Ghoul. Thank you so much, Dara.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. I'm Sarah DeA. We're recording from Fringe Park, still to come on the show. Jem Rules, the man, he's here. And also, a gay Filipino play called Would Virginia Woolf Contemplate on Suicide If She Were Filipino? Really excited to meet the cast there when we come back.
Walk with us on Saturday, June 11th at 1 p.m. Join us for the 8th Annual Spirit Walk on beautiful Mount Royal. The Spirit Walk is an annual fundraiser for the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal, Foyer Potham. Register to walk and set a personal goal to fundraise for the shelter. All funds go directly to the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal towards their second stage housing project and Sarah de Kitak Social Pediatric Clinic. Join us for fun, community-driven event, including musical performances generously supported by CKUT. Everyone is welcome. Bring your friends, family, and pets, and come walk with us. Follow our Instagram at SpiritWalkMTL for links to register and for more information.
Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. I'm your host, Sarah Day. I'm so excited. I'm not recording from my home office this week. I am live at Fringe Park here at the corner of Saint Laurent and Rachel. Fringe Park is about to open officially to the public, kicking off 10 days of the Fringe Festival running until the 19th. FringeMontreal.ca to get your tickets. Buy them now. Don't hesitate. Wait and see. Get see where the buzz is. There's lots of things to see. I think there's something like 70 shows. And 500 artists, and each show is like seven performances, which is wild. One of the performers in front of me right now, fixture at the Fringe Festival and many other Fringe Festivals, Jem Rolls, spoken word artist. Welcome, Jem.
Well, hello, Sarah.
Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you.
How many years on the road doing this?
Depends when you start counting. So I kind of, first Fringe was Edinburgh in 1996. Mm-hmm. First Canada was 2001. I first discovered the lovely city of Montreal, quite possibly my favorite city on earth, or very close, since 2002. So I've done 17 Fringe tours. I've done more Fringe festivals than anyone else this century. And as I keep telling people, I'm only 42. It's just, you know, some people stagger to the end of one Fringe tour and they think, how am I still alive? I can't possibly. And they look at me and they think, oh my God, he's done it 17 times.
It's amazing.
So, but it's the only way of working that I've ever found that I've kind of satisfied with. And there's no, can I use the BS word on this radio?
Go ahead.
And there's so little bullshit in the system, because I mean the arts is full of all manner of gatekeepers and curators and people you are unimpressed with if you ever meet them, and you have to impress them if you want to get somewhere. Well, you don't have to worry about any of that nonsense to do this. You just choose what you're going to do. And I'm doing a show about a Jewish nuclear physicist that no one has ever heard of, which is quite niche as it goes, and if you just go for it, you can make it work. Yeah.
And strangely enough, another physicist. This seems to be a bit of your wheelhouse. But before we get into the Walk in the Snow, the show that you're bringing to Le Ministère, just up the street from here, I want to just turn back to your own lifestyle, because you're somebody who travels when there are no fringes, and you write and you research, and then you spend spring, summer, and I guess into early fall, going to festivals. So where have you been? What have you been doing during the pandemic?
Right. My pandemic was, what's the word to use? It's difficult to say your pandemic was fabulous, because lots of people's worse and wasn't fabulous. Hello. But anyway, I was on a paradise beach in India for a very long time, a 6-mile beach, and the months just merged one into the other. It's a very holy place, very spiritual place. I'm not remotely holy or spiritual, though I did make some accidental pronunciations of my own divinity by wearing white, which is, you know, if you wear all white, apparently you're declaring your own purity, but nobody had told me that in advance, so everyone laughed at me, and I changed colours. Anyway, how did we get there? So, I was, it was a bit like the world had gone somewhere else, and it was a bit like we'd all died, and that was the afterlife. And there I was on some kind of peninsula, beachy, paradise asteroid, floating wooey-wooey in space-time, where the news seemed progressively more virtual and quasi-fictional and just about conceivable, possibly. And, you know, they were just there. It's day after day after day, flat sea, no vapor trails in the sky. It took 15 months for the virus to arrive there. So it was just like we're just in this weird time and space of just, you know, what happened last week? I've no idea. It's April. What happened in March? Did March actually happen? I've no idea. And as my life has been really, really not like that, you know, life's been kind of hectic, it was really kind of good to just plain stretch out time and stop. And now it's been quite difficult getting back into it. I mean, you know, I seem to be getting everything an awful lot of things wrong since I kind of came back into the world as we know it. But I've been taking flights, and I've noticed that flights, that's not working properly. The people who organise flights, they haven't relearned how to do it yet either. Everything's, you know, you're on an aeroplane, circling the airport forever. We have to go and land somewhere because you're like running out of fuel. And or the thing that, you know, the walkway, you walk off the aeroplane, that's not there yet. None of these things used to happen. It's like the
travel,
whole world is learning how to, you know, to do what it does again.
Travel is a bit wonky right now, and it must be hard for you because you're someone who travels for work. That is the voice of Jem Roll, spoken word artist, presenting The Walk in the Snow. First time back at Fringe since 2019, pre-pandemic. He'll be at Le Ministère starting Friday at 8 o'clock. We get to meet Lisa Meitner.
Yeah,
a Jewish
Lise Meitner. Yeah.
The last show you did was also about a physicist, am I right?
Yeah, that was Leo Szilard. I mean, exceedingly different people. He's the first person who ever thought of the atomic bomb. It's a very, very scary notion to have. And Lise Meitner was the person who basically realized it was possible. So in a sense, she's the first person that made the kind of the scientific discovery that you could split the atom. And in a sense, there was an inevitable horrible road to Hiroshima from that day, which is Christmas Eve, 1938, which is the day of, you know, the show's called The Walk in the Snow, and that's the seminal event. And she's very different to the guy before, because this is a really shy person, this is a really quiet person. So in a sense, it's the victory of the shy and the quiet, because she's just genius and determined. I mean, so much determination that you have to stop, think about it, and realize how much determination there is for this woman, this Jewish woman, to be able to actually do kick open the doors, push open the doors in a sense slowly rather than kick them, because she wasn't that kind of person. to push open all those doors and get where she got. It's astonishing.
And what is this about? Well, she was in Germany.
Yeah.
The Nazis come to power.
Yeah.
Does she get out?
She stayed at first because she was a foreigner. So she was Austrian. So and all the awful lot of people are leaving sharpish, and some of them are being killed, let's face it. And she's Austrian. So not until 1938 when Hitler sees his, you know, she wakes up one morning and she's a Jewish German. Which is the worst thing you could possibly be on Earth at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really happened. And so only then does she get out. She's really quite lucky to get out. And she snuck out in circumstances which are still slightly unclear. She's kind of snuck out by a Dutch friend of her who basically comes from Holland and rescues her.
What a hero.
Yeah. And nobody knows. Yeah, if you read a biography of that bloke, it doesn't even mention it.
Is this so cool that you're uncovering again more of these stories of these really important people, but you know, who, you know, could be as famous as Einstein, let's say, but aren't really part of our pop history? You've promised us an excerpt
from
The Walk in the Snow. Are you ready for it?
Okay.
So here's Jem Roll performing parts of Walk in the Snow at Montreal Fringe starting on Friday, June 10th.
On Christmas Eve, 1938. Two Jewish refugees from the Nazis go for a walk in the Swedish snow, and the world is never the same again. That winter morning, Austrian physicists Lise Meitner and her nephew, Otto Robert Frisch, set out on the snowy trail beneath the Berghuis Tower at Kungälv, and the destructive potential of human beings makes a sudden, terrifying leap. Frisch has come up from Copenhagen to see his 60-year-old auntie Lisa. His father is in a concentration camp. She narrowly escaped Nazi Germany, the sum of a four. And her colleagues, still in Berlin, have just sent her, and only her, messages detailing incomprehensible findings. Major research into the atomic nucleus is going on worldwide. In Rome, Paris, Vienna, Denmark, England, America, Japan, Germany. Yet some physicists already mistrust their own understanding when Meitner and Frisch set out in the snow. And science, and the place of science in this world, is never the same again. That fateful morning, he is on skis. She keeps up on snowshoes. He wants to discuss his work in Denmark, but her bewilderment at the Berlin findings makes her fixed-minded. She conjectures, he suggests, and suddenly she is electrified, sits on a tree trunk, scribbling equations on paper, which he redoes, she redoes. He sees it in pictures, she sees it in maths. The atom splits, how the atom splits, why the atom splits, and suddenly everything falls into place. Nobody around the world understands their own experiments. Not only can the atom be split, but they have all been splitting the atom in their labs for years. On Christmas Eve, 38, the two fugitives calculate that when the atom is split, some mass is lost. And what has become of this mass? It's Einstein. It's Einstein, a friend of hers. That mass M has become energy E, according to MC squared equals E, a huge, terrifying, world-shattering amount of E, the energy to light cities and the power to destroy them on Christmas Eve, 38, what some had dreaded but none had understood. On some paper, in the hand of Lise Meitner, the world became a very different place. Thank you.
Jem Rolls performing part of his new show, The Walk in the Snow, coming to Le Ministère, Venue 8, Friday, June 10th at 8 o'clock. How long is the show?
70 minutes.
How many words?
8,300.
How do you memorize all that?
The hard way, which is by rote. The old-fashioned route of learning things by constant repetition. So the other answer would be twice a day for 100 days. But I have been living on a beach in the middle of nowhere, and it is kind of an hour up the beach and an hour back. Yeah, so if you're doing an hour show or something, you know, you can fit that quite nicely into a paradisic stroll up past the dogs that want to eat you.
Jem, I love your life, and I'm so glad that you're back here in Montreal to talk about the show. Where can we follow you when you're not performing and on all the fringe stages?
You can't. Well, I'm on Facebook.
Find you on Facebook.
Yeah.
Jem Rolls.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sarah. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for being here. That is Jem Rolls. Catch him at Venue 8, The Walk in the Snow, about the story of Lise Meitner, a Jewish scientist, and her escape and her story. You're listening to Webstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. I'm Sarah DeA. We're recording from Fringe Park here at Saint Laurent and Rachel. Fringe is about to kick off. If you're hearing lots of voices, that's because an artist, Sanka said, is about to kick off. But we have one more show to bring you in just a moment. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. I'm your host, Sarah DeA. Our final interview of the evening. We are at Fringe Park, Saint Laurent and Rachel. This place is here for you to grab a drink, find out about shows, buy your next ticket, talk to people about the shows you've just seen, and also live acts are going to be here for the next 10 days. It's about to open officially, but we set it up just for us here at CKUT to get a sneak peek at five different shows, our fifth and final show of the evening. What a title. Would Virginia Woolf contemplate on suicide if she were Filipino? It's a story about queer Filipino artists in the diaspora. We meet Lamar, a fresh off the boat migrant, Warren, who is the son of rich immigrants, and they match and they meet up and they have a good time. And, you know, like, things are going good, but what happens next? Joining me right now, Lamar and Warren, real names, Roy Vinson and Mark Dukusin. Welcome, Roy.
Hi.
And welcome, Mark.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here.
And I'll mention playwright Riley is sitting with us here as well. Hi, Riley. So nice to be here. Is this the first Fringe for both of you?
It yes. is, yeah, for both of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How does that feel?
Good. It feels like losing my virginity for the first time. So, yeah, it's a new experience. It's awesome. And it just feels so great to do theater after this whole pandemic thing, especially, like, having an audience and going to rehearsals. Yeah, it's been great. It's been awesome.
Because you're both studying, I guess, in the pandemic, right? Studying acting theater? Am I getting that right?
Not really studying. I was taking acting classes, etc. But, Roy's the one who has the theater school background. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I graduated in 2020. Yeah. So, like, I graduated over Zoom, which sucks for a theater student because nobody ever graduates over Zoom if you're a theater because there's a whole shebang when you graduate as a theater student. So it was really, like, a letdown, but
this must feel like a professional kind of graduation, a professional coming out, no pun intended, for you as performers.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like definitely a rite of passage, and especially as like a patron of the Fringe here in Montreal for all the time I lived in the city, and then back home in Winnipeg, where I'm from originally, which
also has a
booming Fringe festival. So it's exciting finally to step out onto a Fringe stage.
You're the star now.
Right.
Oh. I gave a little synopsis about Lamar and Warren. They're coming from different places, but they're from the same community. Can you tell me about how these guys meet and what their story is?
Well, Lamar is, like you said, a fresh off the boat. As the story goes, he immigrated from the Philippines here in Montreal, and he's been here for 2 years. And it's this, they sort of like match on this app called Manhunter. I think it was an app in 2010.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. But it was actually an app in 2010. I'm not quite too sure, but it's quite like a Grindr type of type of an app.
Kind of like a cross between Grindr and Manhunt, I think.
Yeah.
Right? It's meant really just for casual stuff sort of thing. Are they both in for just a casual kind of hookup?
Or? Ah, that's where the rub is. Mm. So, perhaps one of them is looking for something casual and the other less so.
Buy a ticket and you will know.
You will find out.
What's it like to be telling a story about the Filipino diaspora in Canada?
Yeah, no, it's quite an honor. It's really exciting. We've talked about this before, how for both of us, this is our first time actually playing Filipino, and not my first time playing Filipino character, but my first time playing a gay Filipino character. Yeah, I once got to play the murder victim on a TV show where it was a Filipino character. But so I was a corpse, so I had no lines. So this is my first time being able to speak in a piece of media as a Filipino character. That kind of representation, I think, is really, really exciting. I think very valuable. I think we both feel like we can kind of bring things from our own experiences to the characters.
Yeah, Roy, how do you feel?
Yeah, I'm definitely super honored. Like, I'm so happy that this play exists. I'm so happy that these characters exist, because if I go through my library of theater books, there's little to no, plays that are about Filipinos, unless I have to go to the Philippines, which, you know, it's an 18 hour flight mm-hmm. away, so that's kind of hard. But no, yeah, it's been such an honor. I just love telling our story, our background, and I think it's relatable too. It's just being LGBTQ, it's just being somebody who has been marginalized groups of people, and it's just awesome, and it's just been such an honor. So yeah.
That is the voice of Roy Vinson, who's playing the role of Lamar, and I'm also joined by Mark Dukeson, who's playing the role of Warren, two guys who meet on Manhunter and have a hookup, and then we find out what happens afterwards. We're talking about representation and seeing stories on stage. What is it like for you to go and see a play where your story is represented, whatever that story may be? What's that like for you as individuals?
Yeah, I think it's a really invigorating experience, because everyone's background is different. I mean, even if you have you come from similar cultures, maybe similar nationalities, well, the same nationality or similar ethnically, even within those groups, there are bound to be other differences. So I think one of the beautiful things about this script is that even though the two characters are both gay and gay Filipino males, they come from different socioeconomic backgrounds, and family backgrounds, and have completely different experiences. One of them is my character is second generation, whose parents immigrated before he was born, and then Roy's character is newly immigrated. So that's a completely different immigrant story.
What do you like about your character, Ryan?
Yeah, I think I admire his confidence. There's a lot of bravado to the character, for sure, that's fun to play, and many differences from my own personality that I'm definitely relishing embodying and exploring.
What do you like about your character?
My character is very, so different from who I am as a person. Like, Limar is this sort of shy, has a lot of insecurities because in the Philippines there's a lot of colorism going on, which can go into racism as well, just within Filipinos ourselves.
Right, where you're judging somebody by kind of the shade of color that they are. This just, it's kind of like internal discrimination.
Exactly. So the whiter you are, the lighter skin you have as a Filipino, the more beautiful you are.
And privilege that you have. Right?
Exactly. So, yeah, my character's completely different than who I am. And I just love, that's the beauty of theater, that's the beauty of acting, is playing somebody else. And I love his intellectuality, he's very political, which is really awesome, because as a young person...
That wasn't you.
Yeah, that's not me, though. Like, with the state of the political of Quebec, even in the Philippines, it's just so messed up, and it's just really hard to follow, and there's always so many new things coming out. But getting to play somebody so politically articulate is awesome, and it makes me feel so intellectual myself, even though they're not my words. But yeah, it gives me that confidence. It makes me inspired to be like, hey, I think it's actually important for me to learn what's going on in the world. And I think as a young person, I think, it's more important for me, actually. So yeah, it's He's very I admire him very much, and I'm, like I said before, I'm so honored to play him.
Oh, and my character as well, or also on Lemar?
You were nodding so vigorously that I thought you had something you wanted to add. So you can... No?
Yeah, well, I think... Yeah, just to add to what Roy was saying.
Yeah.
I think the political headbutting that happens in this play is sort of an unexpected
turn. Yeah, because it sounds like we're just going to have a date night.
Exactly.
That's going to have, like, flirtiness to it, a bit of rejection, like, it's going to touch our hearts, but there's another layer.
Yeah, this whole dialectic opens up that, and they lay bare a lot of things about their different experiences, their different worldviews even.
And I think what's so, not to sound pedantic, but what's so nice about seeing stories like this is that people who are in the community see themselves represented. People who are not within the community go, and it's not a documentary, but it's a learning experience where you have a window into just how varied it is to be in an ethnic community. Like, that not every experience is going to be the same. There's strain within it. Mm-hmm. We all kind of, like, are a bit better for having seen the show.
And also, I think you can relate to this story because you're on dating apps. You know, like, it's 2022. Like, everyone or 90% of everybody is on dating apps. You've been on shitty dates. You've been on shitty, like, hookups. You can definitely relate, even though you're not Filipino, even though you're not gay, even if you're not, you know, marginalized or whatsoever. It's two people coming in for a date and expecting something, but then it turns out something else. That's basically what the story is all about, and I think everybody can take something away from it that is really either, maybe I should change my dating sort of like habits, or maybe I could approach dating in a different way, maybe, or like maybe I should be a little less aggressive, or maybe I should you know, put myself out there more. You know, it's very relatable, and the playwright's a genius, so honestly, it's great.
Should I bring a date to the show?
Oh, yeah.
Is this a good date night show?
I think so, especially if it's like your first date. I think it's going to be like, oh, yeah, so we're not going to talk about that, so we don't end up doing this. You know what I mean? So maybe.
That is the voice of Roy Vinson, who plays the role of Lamar, and Mark Dukeson, who's playing the role of Warren. Two guys who match, they meet up. The story is, would Virginia Woolf contemplate on suicide if she were Filipino? It is coming to Le Théâtre La Comédie de Montréal, 1113 Boulevard de Maisonneuve East, Venue 3. I think that's new this year. First show tonight, June 9th at 8:30, all the way until Father's Day, June 19th. Guys, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Riley, if we want to follow your company, where do we go? Riley is here too, who's also part of the team. Where do we follow your work? Facebook. Okay, so we look up, would Virginia Woolf contemplate on suicide if she were Filipino? Facebook page, like it, and follow their work, because you guys seem like people to watch. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
That concludes tonight's episode of Upstage, a special edition coming to you from the Fringe Park at Saint Laurent and Rachel. In just a matter of hours, this park is going to be open. There's going to be live performances here until June 19th. So grab a beer, grab a program, come on down, make your schedule for Fringe. There's going to be hundreds of shows to see, 70 different shows, 500 artists from here until June 19th. Back in full force this year, the Saint-Thomas Montreal Fringe Festival. Tonight you heard Marissa Blair and Jerome Lindemann of Adam and Eve at Venue 7 Mission Santa Cruz. Nisha Coleman shares her experience of learning French en français, her show Cornichon and Parcours Perplexe vers la Francophonie happening at Le Balustrade. Dara Mondou of Sire, a father-daughter vampire story at Petit Campus. The Walk in the Snow, the true story of Lise Meitner by Jem Rolls at Le Ministère, the one and only. And Roy Vinson and Mark Dukeson of Would Virginia Woolf Contemplate on Suicide if She Were Filipino at La Théâtre La Comédie de Montréal, a new venue this year. A very big thank you to my guests, and an excellent big
thank you to the Saint-Ambroise Fringe Festival for hosting us here at Fringe Park. Thanks in particular to Sarah Grenier-Lafosse and Adam Ryder for helping us set up and being our hosts. And a very big special thanks to the team here from CKUT joining me today, Chloe McClegan and Olivier Jonkis, and Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator. They set up all our recording equipment here today, and it's the reason why I'm broadcasting here and not at my home office. I'm so glad to join you. The Fringe Festival kicks off now, runs until June 19th. You can get tickets and information at montrealfringe.ca. You can also pick up your physical program, too, if you want to make your plans that way. Please note, tickets are virtual this year. There's no paper tickets, so you'll want to make sure you're buying things in advance and making a plan. A lot of shows, I think, not being close to sold out, but a lot of people are getting their tickets in advance. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. I've been your host, Sarah Day. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. More stories next week from The Fringe and other theater going around in the city. Have fun, stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters.
My levels are at around 8.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's kind of a tongue twister.
Am I popping my peas?
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Start again.
Oh, should I do that? Okay.
I need a script.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
I think... So, you want me to go through it again and actually say that?
This sounds so repetitive.
See, now I can't do it. Once more, okay.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Wait, do you want me to say hello?
I'll have to do another one.
Yeah, maybe one last one.